It's good to have passion for your work, isn't it? When you like what you do, you look forward to doing it and sometimes have a hard time pulling yourself away. It's that second point that may be a problem, because if your boss knows you really like your job, your boss may ask you to do it longer and take on additional duties. That's the essence of research recently published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. The research indicates that the passionate people at work are also the ones employers take advantage of with additional skills and hours or additional duties and hours. Troy Campbell is assistant professor of marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon. He was part of the research team along with researchers at Duke University and the University of Oklahoma. Troy Campbell, a return visit. Thanks for joining us once again on The Exchange.
Hi, Jeffrey. Good to be here.
Good to have you once again. This sounds like a bummer for enthusiastic people right out of the box. They get taken advantage of?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a professor who works at the intersection of business, psychology, and art. And I've been in all these amazing, you know, places because of that, and I've been following my passion, but I think that lots of you probably have noticed little things like this, and or maybe this research can help some conceptual clarity around that, is that when we are passionate, our employers are more likely to ask us to do extra, unpaid, and more demeaning work and think that that's okay to do.
I can understand the extra, but the unpaid, that's how does that work out?
Yeah. So, you know, what we find is in our research is that what people are seeing when people are passionate is that the work itself is its own reward. And so if you present a situation to somebody and you say, would it be legitimate to ask this person to work extra hours, including things that are not even in their job description? So, for instance, asking an artist to clean the bathrooms when that is not part of their job. We find people think that that is more legitimate to do. And we just see this as a tendency that human beings really need to watch out for when we are working with others and to potentially watch out how it might be operating in your situation.
So let's talk about how you measure this and in what kinds of workplaces.
Yeah, so what we do, we did a study with over 2,400 people, and so we have 8 small studies across that. So we have a classic psychological perception study, which tests the things in so many different ways and make sure that we aren't missing a counter explanation. And the general thing what we are doing is we describe to people a person. And for instance, in one study, we are describing a person who's an artist. And either we're describing that person as strongly passionate about their job or less passionate about their job, or in some studies, sort of passionate about the job. We always find that it seems more legitimate. People say it's more legitimate for the boss to exploit that artist in the way by asking them to do more work, leave a day at the park with family, or clean office bathrooms. And we make sure that we look at this across many situations. So, for instance, we're not just looking at people's perceptions of things that would happen in art. We also looked at it in business. We also looked at it in academia. We also made sure that in some of our studies, our participants were general Americans. Sometimes it was students at universities. And yes, sometimes it was people who were actually managers having the same perception.
All right. So 2,400 people, a variety of fields, and over what amount of time?
So the experiments were done slowly over 3 or 4 years by a team of researchers who were all at Duke University. And then we all got jobs at wonderful places like the University of Oregon and other places. And it slowed our research down, and we were able to come back to this project in earnest about a year and a half ago and really get it finished.
All right, so it started while you were at Duke, you're saying?
Yes, it did.
Okay, and then you continued finally last year. So how, let's break it down a little, Troy. Are there certain fields in which the exploitation seems to appear more often?
Well, so what we find in one study is we presented people about 40 professions. And we had people rate the professions on how much passion they thought people had in that. So if you thought like art or events planning or academia or journalism, you'd find people perceive that as more passionate. And then we asked an entirely separate group of people, you know, how okay would it be to do these things that we consider light exploitation in these situations? And people rate those as much higher, even if they're not explicitly thinking about passion. We haven't asked them to do that. It's just this automatic response that they are are using that. So we see this correlation across many different jobs, that those jobs in which we see people deriving more passion from it, we're more okay with exploiting them in those situations.
Troy Campbell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, assistant professor of marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon. We're talking about passion in the workplace. He was part of a team that looked into how people who exploit or display some passion get exploited by workers. The piece is called Understanding Contemporary Forms of Exploitation, Attributions of Passion Serve to Legitimize the Poor Treatment of Workers, published April 18th in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. Questions, comments from you, maybe examples you'd like to offer about ways in which you felt you got taken advantage of because you displayed some passion at your workplace. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So do you have a tally of incidents, or is this more about perceptions that we're talking about here, Troy?
Yeah, so we are a psychologist, so our real goal is to establish the psychological tendency that when people see passion, they generally see it as more okay to legitimize that. And so actually one of the things that my students are doing as a follow-up, I have this really great group of students here at the Webfoot Media, a group that just started of creatives at the University of Oregon. We're going to create a website called Passion Problems. And what we're going to try and do is we're trying to gather all the stories, like some of the stories that your listeners might call in, stories that we've already found on Reddit boards, stories that they have. They're also potentially going to do some creative storytelling with it and sort of just get the suite of these things. And so I think it's one thing to, you know, hear about a theory, but as we know from teaching, we know that if you don't have a lot of examples to sort of fill out the richness of a theory, it's hard for that to keep in your head so you can respond to it. So we want you to have some examples of how this happens. So one of the examples that happens with my students all the time is that we call it the kid who loves Photoshop problem. And the kid who loves Photoshop in a group, his group says, all right, this weekend we're all going to do about 2 hours on the group project, but Photoshop kid, since you love Photoshop, spend 8 hours on that. But that's okay because, you know, you love Photoshop. And these things happen all the time, and we want to collect the stories of them because these rich stories will help us understand each other on top of the foundational theory.
Let's talk about reasoning then on the parts of the people who are not Photoshop kid, I guess would be the essence of it. I mean, how do they feel justified in doing this?
Yeah, so the reasoning that we find, at least in our study, is that there are two things that they come to mind. One is the assumption that the person would have volunteered for it anyway. And the other assumption is that the work is its own reward. And while those things are not necessarily factually incorrect all the time, that line of thinking, if not checked, can lead to some pretty problematic situations. And I think that lots of times people don't understand that people have other passions or that calling work work, even when it's rewarding work, is an important thing for us all to remember.
So bosses then would feel some justification, you're saying, in doling out extra work, even if it's demeaning work, because they love it?
Because they assume that the person at the workplace would have volunteered for it, or that they get some reward from doing it.
How does that get into areas, though, where, like, you have an artist cleaning a toilet? That's not the field in which the person displayed a passion, unless maybe what the employer is doing there is assuming some sort of a passion umbrella. You love it here so much, you'll do anything here.
Yeah, and I think that passion umbrella, great term, you should be a marketing professor, really does explain sort of the breadth of the problem. Is that this is happening in many different ways. It's not just overworking people. It's potentially mistreating people. It's in situations where you might not actually provide enough resources to people, whether that is time or support in the workplace or mental health resources or food in certain situations.
Troy Campbell, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an assistant professor of marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon. We're talking about how passionate people appear to get exploited in the workplace. This was something that Troy was one of a team of researchers on. You can join us at 800-838-3760, perhaps with a story to share about getting exploited at work, or perhaps you were the exploiter. We only use first names. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Troy, does seniority enter into it? Does this happen more often with younger workers, earlier in careers, for example?
Yeah, so with our research right now, we can't say exactly whether that is true. Most likely, I imagine that is correct, that it would probably happen with younger people. But most likely, what we're going to see there is less entirely a function of the legitimization of passion exploitation and a confluence of other biases, such as belief that this work will be satisfying and helping the person in their long-term career, or just these authority or I paid my dues, you should pay your dues. So those are a little bit different psychological explanations. And I think that when you look at the problems in the workplace, they're a mix of these things, and we're introducing another one.
There appears to be a reverse observation in the research, too, that if people are exploited at work, we make some assumptions about how they feel about their jobs.
Yeah, so in one study, what we did was we described a PhD student who was either exploited, very mistreated by his advisor, mean, long hours, unrealistic deadlines, or not. And what people assumed there was that the person themselves, that PhD student, was more passionate when they were exploited. And again, while not necessarily always incorrect, it is scary to think that we will assume that someone in a bad situation, our mind jumps to the conclusion that they must be passionate about their work. And if we see passion as legitimizing exploitation, this sort of dual directions of our thinking here might be that every single time we see exploitation, we might be quick to think, oh, it's okay because they must be passionate about that. And I think that line of thinking, if left unchecked, if we use quick biased heuristic thinking rather than slowing down and evaluating the situation, can be very, very problematic.
So don't assume that because somebody's working long hours that they love their jobs.
Yep, because know your brain is going to, has a tendency to do that.
Which brings us into the tech world, and the paper does reference that, and much has been made over the years about people who work gigantically long hours at the likes of Google because they're just expected to. So it makes me wonder if longer hours are expected and somehow the people in charge translate that to passion.
Yeah. So the idea is like, oh, you must be so passionate about this because I told you to do it and I'm treating you so horribly and you're still here, right? So you could imagine that terrible circular logic coming into people's brains, especially when, again, in the real world, there's a confluence of biases. It's not just this. And there might be a bias that boss has is they want to see their employees as more passionate or singularly passionate about this. And we can get into some other research that I've done and other people do on motivated reasoning. When we want to believe something, we can easily make ourselves believe in it, especially when it's an ambiguous situation such as this.
Okay. So, wanting to believe something makes it seem like it's becoming true.
Yep.
So in any field, how much passion, I don't know if this is included in the research or at least some reference to it is expected just in the hiring process. I mean, you have to express a certain amount of passion for what you think you're about to be doing when you're trying to get hired, right?
Yeah. And so I think that one of the most important things to just note real up the top, and I think you said it at the start of the intro to this clip, is that this research is in no way anti-passion. We are very pro-passion. We know that passion does so many good things for people. Every single one of the researchers on this paper is following their passion. Really, what we want to do is make sure that people are aware that there are passion problems, that there are ways in which our thinking around passion can lead to negative outcomes. And so that is our main takeaway. Our takeaway is not don't not have passion or don't hire workers who are unpassionate or don't expect your workers to be still expect your workers to have some passion. It's more to be in check with this bias we have towards legitimizing passion exploitation.
All right. So you're not saying to workers, sit there with your head down and try not to look passionate at work.
No, we are not. And I think that when we think of how workers can, get around this, I think there's two ways to think about this. One is the obvious way, which is you go up to your boss and say, I could be better at this job if I could come in later, or I worked fewer hours, or this wasn't there. Or the other thing is potentially is to make your boss aware that you have other passions, right? It's not just that your work is this passion. You have a passion for your family, your passion for your hobbies, a passion for a side job, these other things. And if you have a good boss, then those things potentially should fix the problem to some degree. If you don't have a good boss, then those things won't fix it. But the problem there is probably not a well-intentioned person engaging in the bias of passion, exploitation, legitimization thinking. It's probably that the boss is problematic. So if you've got a good boss, let them know that you can work better in a different situation and that you have other passions.
So, Troy, beyond the analysis that comes from this research, are you and your colleagues putting forth any recommendations in things like policy changes?
Yeah, so we are academic researchers, and we are academic researchers within the field of psychology. And I think it would be a little pompous or arrogant of us to really think that we can say what the policy solution should be in certain situations. And so what I like to say with the type of research that we do is that we're giving you tools, whether you are a person or a policymaker, to help you think, not to command how you think or how you do your policy. So policy is just really, really difficult, right? So in certain situations, if I would potentially want to have a regulation of passion exploitation, or I might want to have a regulation of how many hours an intern could do, or certain minimum payments for certain internships. But there are ways in sometimes that that would actually reduce freedoms or potentially actually lead to certain inequalities because of who could access that under those situations. And so it's really hard for me to say what the actual policy situation should be in any situation, because I'm not a policymaker. I'm a designer and business psychologist.
So about a minute left here, Troy Campbell. Where would you like to see future research follow up with what you did here?
Yeah, what I would like future research to do is to look at ways in which we can present information that leads to debiasing. And so debiasing, of course, is the huge thing in modern psychology, from unconscious bias to all our prejudices. And this situation is one of these biases. And so we're hoping that testing out certain types of narrative forms or certain rich levels of examples could lead to debiasing of people, adding story to theory when we present these ideas to people. And we're also developing a couple trainings. I do some executive trainings with big companies that we might be adding as well.
All right. So the research is called Understanding Contemporary Forms of Exploitation, Attributions of Passion Serve to Legitimize the Poor Treatment of Workers. That's in the April 18th issue of the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. Four researchers, including Troy Campbell, who's now at the University of Oregon Lundquist College of Business, Assistant Professor of Marketing. Troy, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you very much.